The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks. If we can't move, we can't podcast. It's SIFPOP. Welcome to SIFPOP Weekly, streaming live most Saturday mornings, are available to download later in your podcast feed, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks.
I'm a deer.
I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and we are the same, he and I. We are two odd, lonely children reaching for eternity. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
Nope, sorry, you're wrong.
I am Cornpulio!
We're going full Beavis and Butthead today, along with Elvis. Belvis and Butthead? be a different
You're movie. A hound dog.
You know, the two odd lonely children reaching for eternity, strangely not about the Beavis and Butthead movie. That's actually from, Elvis movie. That's where that came from. Each week we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. In case I didn't already say that, we've also got best ever challenge today, best ever musical biopics.
Music ones, you say.
Music ones, I say. Yes. Andrew had a little last second shuffling. After finding out the musical part.
One day I'll learn to read, because I just read Best Ever Biopics. And you know how many musical biopics were in the list that I originally sent, Phil?
Zero?
Zero!
Nicely done.
So,
We will get there. Got a couple of reviews, and of course our buried treasure eventually as well. Thanks for joining us on a Monday. I've been on vacation a little bit. Hanging out in Florida, having some fun, and decided to come back and immediately start podcasting again. And so here we go.
Get right back into the swing of things, huh?
Right back into it. In fact, let's get into it. Let's chat first about Elvis.
In that moment, Elvis the man was sacrificed, and Elvis the god was born.
You're looking for trouble? You came to the right place. You're looking for trouble? Look right in my face.
He had no idea what he had done.
The life story of Elvis Presley is seen through the complicated relationship with his enigmatic manager, Colonel Tom Parker. Austin Butler stepping in as Elvis Presley. Tom Hanks as Tom Parker. What did you think, Andrew? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, or hate it, or it was just okay?
I loved it.
Nice.
Phenomenal movie. What'd you think?
That's interesting. I'm excited to talk about it. I'm going to go with high side of liked it, I think is where I'm going to end up on this one.
Okay.
For some very specific reasons that we will get into, but yeah,
It's not without its problems, this movie.
Go on with your love for the movie.
Okay. You know me. I am a stickler for good performances. If a movie is, you know, filled with good performances, then there's a really high probability that I'm going to come away liking it. And I also love technology, so the fact that they were able to go back in time and get not only Elvis Presley, but also Colonel Parker. I mean, Austin Butler is Elvis in this movie. It's actually kind of, like, eerie at first. Like, he is so much of Elvis, because, and I think the thing that a lot of people would be afraid with a movie like this is it's easy to do, you know, an Elvis impression, you know, and then fall into, you know, ho, 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 you know, and it would just come across as campy and bad. No, it feels like he embodies everything that is Elvis. And not only that, I mean, Tom Hanks needs to stop being so good. I mean, it's not fair to the rest of the actors in Hollywood because he's always going to get the call first. I don't know who the makeup department or whoever they hired to get all him and the prosthetics and everything, but wow, he transformed. Both of these guys transformed. And, you know, normally I'll run on here and rave about one actor, transcending into a role. Here we have our two leads both transcending and becoming totally different people, and two very recognizable people. One, probably the most recognizable person in America. History of music, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's possible. I can go with you on half of that. I think Austin Butler is amazing. I don't think Tom Hanks is that good in this movie.
Ooh, I gotta hear this.
No, I I'm wondering if part of it is maybe he's too good. Maybe this is exactly who Tom Parker was. But I just didn't buy this performance. I didn't buy this character. I didn't buy it. Just seemed really strange and weird. It took me out of the movie in many ways.
You don't believe that this is how he acted,
It felt like an SNL, you know, like caricature kind of skit kind of thing to me.
Okay.
But that could have just been me. That could have just been, and maybe Tom Parker was like that in real life. I don't know. I don't have a lot of necessarily familiarity with him, but I didn't understand the accent he was doing. I didn't understand.
Holland.
What's that?
Holland.
Holland?
Holland is where...
The place. I thought you were saying Tom Holland for some reason. I was like,
oh no. That's a little bit different. No, I forget his name is like Anson or something like that. The original, like his real name, but he is like a world citizen. So he just traveled the world, and he was from Holland.
Yeah. So the accent didn't work for me and the performance didn't necessarily work for me. However, I will completely 100% back you up on the Elvis thing. I think Austin Butler is just absolutely astonishing in this role and probably worth the price of admission alone. The other thing I really enjoyed about this movie is I like the way Baz Luhrmann makes movies. There's something so kinetic. And if you're going to take this long to tell me a story, right? Like if you're going to take 2 hours and 40 minutes and try to cover this entire person's life, you're going to kind of have to put it in fast forward a few times. And nobody does that better than Baz Luhrmann. Like you can feel like you're skipping over chunks sometimes, but in this case, it just felt like, no, we're just kind of going to give you the big highlight, you know, reel of this section that we're kind of moving past. And I really dug that. I dug the energy of it. It gave it something fresh for me. I liked the Baz Luhrmann of it all for me.
Yeah, I think that, as you said, Baz Luhrmann has a style where he really pushes. He doesn't like to stay in one place for too long, unless it's necessary, because I think the way that this movie flows is it's trying to give you the sense of how quickly Elvis became this iconic figure. So the super fast pace, you know, of everything moving fast for him. And then, you know, like, I wouldn't say halfway, towards like the second end of the beginning, you know, there's a tragedy that happens. And then the tempo, you know, drastically goes down, you know. But then right after that, it picks right back up again. You know, it's interesting. I will say, too, the movie's minor detriment, one of my only negatives with it is it was difficult to like place where we when we were, you know, because all of a sudden he's like,
it pretty much goes in order though. You just mean
I'm not saying that it's not linear. I'm saying that it's like how far have we from our last scene until the next scene. Like, how far? Like, he was at a concert, and then all of a sudden, he's being drafted. And I'm like, was this a year after this? Was it, you know, 2 years after the concert? Or being in jail? You know, something like that.
Yeah, it really does kind of jump to those major points.
That's so minute, but that's really my only comment.
Well, and again, I kind of liked that part of it. I kind of liked that we didn't have to spend a lot of time. We've talked about, I think even recently, how the thing that most people are doing with biopics now is they're taking a moment and they're just telling the story of that moment and then maybe layering in some flashbacks or that kind of stuff. It has been a while since we've seen somebody go full life and just go, oh, we're telling the whole life story of this person. And how do you do that in a modern age? And I think Baz gives it his best shot, you know?
Yeah, because it's a biopic that's not told from the main focus's viewpoint. Mm-hmm. This is Elvis's life through the Colonel's eyes.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So it's you know, you miss out on, like, his childhood and stuff. Yes, we get, like, quick flashbacks, but the movie doesn't have to, you know, spend that much time. It feels like it's as if Elvis was telling the Colonel, this is how I, you know, fell in love with music or something. And then the Colonel quickly told us, too.
Yeah, it's definitely all narrated by the Colonel, but I do feel like we got plenty of the growing up. Like, enough at least to kind of give us you know, what we needed to understand his musical influences, and a lot of that stuff is definitely played later as a callback and an echo.
As an example, you know, Walk the Line starts with Johnny Cash as a kid. We see the tragedy with his brother, and then we see him gradually grow up. Here, we meet the Colonel, and then we already see a grown-up Elvis. So he's still young in his career, like he's undiscovered, but, you know, we're really getting, like, quick, we're right into the music of Elvis.
What's your familiarity with Elvis before this movie?
My mom played him all the time. She's actually in the theater right now watching it, so.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
Fun.
But it was really my grandma Ronci, and that's who my mom took to the movie theaters. Like, she's been to Graceland, you know, I know Elvis's music, and I think I saw a documentary once forever long ago to where I don't remember anything. But during this movie, I'm like, oh yeah, I think I remember seeing that but other than that, I don't know that much.
Yeah, I was pretty familiar with the music, obviously, and have heard most of the songs.
Hard not to be.
I had bits and pieces of familiarity with some of the career movements, you know, the Vegas thing, the special. Like, I was aware of all that stuff, but just kind of in a vague way, not necessarily a specific way. So for me, one of the other things I really liked about this movie was I found it to be educational. I found it to be to do that thing that I like where a movie is like, I'm going to tell you the interesting stuff. So now you kind of know the interesting stuff. And certainly it's a movie. So maybe what I'm seeing isn't 100% correct. So there's always that. But
for all we know, it's as authentic as Bohemian Rhapsody. For as much as I love that movie, it's a. It's hard to call it
by. Speaking of Bohemian Rhapsody, another thing to mention is I do not believe Austin Butler did the singing in this movie. So that's definitely, for me, worth mentioning because for me, it shades the performance just a little bit.
I mean, he did such a good job of, you know, lip syncing it that I couldn't tell.
I couldn't either. It's an incredible performance.
I could have guessed it was him singing.
Yeah, it's an incredible performance. I always just like it when the performer is like that next level, can also sing, but, you know.
Yeah.
It's when you're dealing with Elvis or Freddie Mercury, I know it's tough. I know it's hard. Sometimes you got to get the ringer.
You can't just sing well when you're doing these guys. There was something about their, you know, the way they carry themselves and their vocal tones had such a unique, you know, sound to them that it's really hard to find somebody that looks and sounds like them too. So I don't give the movie too much flack for that.
No, and it's not bad. In for a lot of the songs that are recorded in high enough quality, they're actually using the Elvis recordings and then kind of mixing it with, you know, some of Butler's stuff. I guess he did sing some of the early stuff that there aren't like high, you know, quality recordings of. So it's not, you know, it's not necessarily an all or nothing kind of thing. But yeah. One of the other things I really liked about this, I loved the costuming, the design, all that kind of stuff was really cool. I felt like it had a little bit of extra oomph on it from like Baz Luhrmann. It felt a little bit Moulin Rouge-y at times. I'm like, I wonder if it was exactly like that.
It's Vegas. He was a showman, you know? I think that that could be pretty authentic too. Because for all the stuff I've seen, I never saw Elvis, you know, in like in a polo and jeans. Every single picture I see of Elvis, he's wearing that bedazzled, you know, show jacket and everything. So, but yeah, that's right up Baz's alley as far as costume design.
Yeah. But I just, the stylization, all that kind of stuff is pretty amazing. I'm going to go to a question from the chat just because I do want to address it. The question is about how triggering is the Priscilla Presley stuff involving the fact that she was so young when she met Elvis. And I will just say, I don't think the movie touches on it at all, really. I think it just shows them as having a beautiful love story. I believe she was 14 when they met. I don't know how old she was when they got married.
Yeah, the movie didn't say that because I did not know that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think he was 24 and she was 14 when they met. And I'm not sure when they got married, but I can look that up. We've got a thing called the internet. They got married 7 years later. So he would have been 31 and she would have been 21, when they got married. So I mean, the movie doesn't touch on those 7 years really at all. All of that is just like, you see a date that they're on where they're talking, when it looks like she's in college, actually. No, she's at home. Or was it a college dorm?
Talking? No, that was her house. Like, I guess her father was the, whenever he was drafted and he was overseas, you know, in the army. I guess her father was an army officer and he was having a party or something and she was there.
I don't think that's supposed to be the moment they met, but I don't think she was supposed to be 14 in the movie. So I think the movie completely just doesn't address that at all. That's not what it's doing.
Something else that the movie does, and I should say this, and I'm not saying that there are, it doesn't show really any controversies on Elvis's side. Like, like for an instance, like him pursuing a younger woman, the movie is pretty cut and dry that Elvis is good and the Colonel is bad, you know?
Yeah.
So it can feel like maybe a little bit of a biased biopic. Like, yeah, I'm sure Elvis has done some, you know, stuff. Make him human.
Yes. Yeah. There was a little bit of that in Bohemian Rhapsody as well, that in Freddie Mercury's, it's interesting because I thought coming out of that you couldn't really ignore Freddie Mercury's stuff, and yet they tried to paint it as if like it was everybody else's fault that he made the decisions that he made. And I understand that. But in this, they literally don't even address, like, the whole later era of his life was so, I mean, he died at 42 of a drug overdose, right? Like, I mean, this is something that dominated him, and the movie just kind of brushes over it a little bit. And I do think that is to the movie's detriment. I don't think that's the movie Baz Luhrmann wanted to make, but I do think it steals a little bit from the authenticity of the experience and understanding this person.
The movie's called Elvis. Mm-hmm. Is it about Elvis? Or is it about the Colonel, this movie?
It's a good question. It's certainly from the perspective of the Colonel.
Yeah, because I don't know if this movie is the Colonel pleading his case, or if this movie is just Baz Luhrmann trying to show, the Colonel was there and this is what he did. So I don't know if it's like, I don't know what the movie, it's difficult.
I mean, he's the villain of the movie.
Either way, he's the villain.
Right.
Either way, the Colonel's the villain. Yeah.
Yeah. And kind of an unreliable narrator, too, which is kind of interesting
like
in some
that,
ways.
Yeah. I like that element, too. He's like, why didn't he listen to me? You know, he's like, I told him not to shake his hips.
And maybe that's the excuse. Maybe that's the excuse for not touching some of that stuff, because the Colonel didn't care about that. So that's not the stuff he was interested in. He was interested in how he could use Elvis, you know, not necessarily that other stuff. Might be possibly what they would say, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Let's see. Here's another main negative for me.
Yeah.
And I don't know that it's the movie's fault, but I'll just throw it out there. It is so difficult to do this style of musical biopic when Walk Hard exists as a movie. And I think there were times during this movie where I just felt like it was ridiculous.
Do you mean Walk the Line or Walk Hard?
No, I mean Walk Hard. Okay. I mean the parody, because okay. That is such a picture-perfect parody of the musical biopic that now when a musical biopic tries to do that stuff, it almost feels silly and ridiculous and, you know, over the top. And all I can think about is the parody that, you know,
really
took it to task. Yeah.
I can tell you that Walk Hard never once entered my mind as I was watching it. And I didn't even think about it until you brought it up. I will say I was thinking all the time about Walk the Line,
mm-hmm.
you know, which Elvis is in, you know, he's in mm-hmm. Walk the Line. But it's just that I think that era of music was, you know, a renaissance in America. So whenever you have any biopic without like those guys like B.B. King, Elvis, Johnny Cash, Bob Dylan, any of those guys, you know, it's kind of going to have the same feel to it. The rebellion against, you know, a possible corrupt government, talking politics while trying to make music. That's brought up in this movie. You know, they talk about Bobby Kennedy, Martin Luther King. They talk about a couple things. This movie didn't go into race relations as much as I thought it thinks it did, if that makes sense. I think the movie believed it was saying something about race relations, but it never, it was like dipping its toe in the pool without actually, you know, taking the actual leap.
Yeah, that was another one of my negatives, is it doesn't really wrestle with that at all. And again, it's apparently just not what this movie is trying to do. But there is the element of, is Elvis, you know, stealing music that he's heard from African-American artists and using his whiteness to be able to make it more palatable to the South and to, you know, other Americans? And or is it a genuine influence, right? Like, is it just he grew up in a black community and his influences were the, you know, the clubs where these blues singers were singing or the gospel churches, you know, and that's where this movie kind of goes, but it doesn't wrestle with it.
The movie leans towards the latter of those.
Oh, for sure. But it doesn't even wrestle with it. It just leans that way without ever really kind of wrestling with that idea or what that might mean. It's a real kind of hand wavy wink, you know, almost winking at, no, winking's too strong, but more hand wavy. That's not what we're here to deal with. You know, these were his influences. And I think a different movie could have handled that in an interesting way. So yeah, I think that's right. Do you know enough about Elvis to know like what was real and what was made up in this movie?
No.
Yeah, me either.
I knew basics like Graceland. I forgot the name, but I remembered it was the International Hotel. Like as the movie, because I knew like he kind of made that his home towards the end of his life, but I forgot the name. But yeah, not enough to where I can fact check it. It's not like the Bohemian Rhapsody where I could go, I don't think that didn't happen, because you know I've read a lot about Freddie Mercury because he's my favorite.
Yeah. So I've just read like articles, and some of the basic stuff that was made up for the movie is Tom Parker was never against Elvis using his sex appeal. Like there was never this moment where he was like, tone that down, be more family Elvis, be the new Elvis. That whole thing was kind of made up.
Interesting.
He was all for the, you know, the carnival atmosphere, right? So he was all for, you know, bringing people in. And
That's a big part of the movie.
It really is. And that's why it stuck out to me.
Yeah, because the movie is really driving home the idea of the Colonel wanted the music, but he wanted a family-friendly face to plaster it on that he could merchandise.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yep. So yeah, that was pretty much all I remember specifically from that. But yeah, it'll be interesting to kind of, because again, movies are movies, right? Movies do movie stuff and they change stuff around.
Besides, you know, Tom Hanks and Austin Butler, all the other characters in the movie kind of blended together. Did that happen to you? Like, he brings in a couple of new managers, I think.
Well, the whole Memphis Mafia thing is not, like, sketched out hardly. Like, there's one moment where it almost treats it like a Jackass intro or something, where it's like...
Yes! It's like the stop frame is like we're going through the tour bus.
And that's it.
Like,
that's it. That's all we get to know, these, like, five or six people that are in the whole movie.
And they none of them have any dialogue.
No.
Like, why introduce them in this manner? Other than, the movie does have issues, but when it comes to the music, the performances, and did this tug at my emotional heartstrings, it's 100% yes on all of those questions.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I love it.
I guess the only other thing that I would say from the truth or fiction is Elvis never fired Tom Parker from stage. That was all dramatic license.
That was great, though.
It's great. It's a great moment.
It was great.
It was a great moment. The other thing. That's the other thing. Let's end in a positive. There are so many great movie moments in this movie. Like this movie has several times where you're just like, this is amazing.
The birth of Elvis or Pelvis Elvis, you know, like with the girls and stuff.
That was one of my main Walk Hard vibes was during that scene. There's a whole scene parodying that in Walk Hard.
I haven't seen Walk Hard since it came out in theater, so I couldn't mention anything from it, but like, for as iconic a character as Elvis was, I think a lot of people need to know that he had some demons that, and I think that that's the great thing about biopics for, especially musicians. I say this not having seen many biopics about musicians, but the good thing that they do is we as the public can really, you know, glorify and deitize them.
Deify.
You know, deify them. Yeah, thank you. And then you see in these biopics the toll that can take. Because they are people.
Mm-hmm.
They're very talented people, but they are people. They feel everything that you and I feel. And I think that we, that's one of the beautiful things about biopics, and that's why I really appreciate them.
Yeah, I agree. It is sad how many stories of the greats end like Elvis or Michael or Whitney Amy Winehouse, or I mean, we could list names probably for the next 30 minutes.
And that's sad.
And that's
sad.
Very, very sad. And I was trying to think, like, fame is so hard to escape unscathed. You know, that kind of fame and power and celebrity is just very difficult. And I think people are more getting a handle on it now. And I think part of that also has to do with the fact that in some ways everybody's famous now. Like, we all have an outlet to have an audience of some sort. And so there's more kind of growing up, there's a little more awareness of what it means to be in front of people or perform, those kind of things. But like, I feel like Taylor Swift has kind of survived okay, and she's kind of been at the top, you know? Yeah. So I think it can happen. It's just, man, it's clearly difficult.
It's got to be different back then than it is now, because, like you said, because every single person today can have a level of fame. You and I, for as minimalistic as it is, we have a level of fame.
There are 10 people watching this live right now.
Yeah. But, like, do you have how many weekly viewers do we have, like, on the show? Do you know?
Like, listeners? Like, downloads?
Yeah. Yeah.
Last I checked, it was somewhere in the 3,000 range.
Okay.
Per episode, usually, by the time it's done. Maybe not during the week. We have about 12,000 downloads a month overall, something around those lines.
Yeah. And I had, you know, back in the day, I had a YouTube channel, I had 50,000 subscribers. The point I'm trying to get at is the fact that everybody can have fame, like you said, and that fame is now in our modern times kind of spread out.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day when you had Elvis and them, there were like 15-20 famous musicians, you know. So that fandom was really concentrated on individuals,
and the access was supremely limited.
Yes.
So those moments where you got to be in the presence of fame or celebrity or whatever meant even more, because you weren't watching your favorite musical artist's Instagram or TikTok or, you know, whatever the case may be. So,
I don't think people realize how young the internet is.
You couldn't tweet Elvis, you know, and
no.
just say, "At Elvis, great show last night." You know, like that just, there's no access. So, yeah, definitely different. Definitely different. Any final thoughts on
no post-credit scene
Elvis?
But there are during the credits. You have the you know, like the audio of him like talking and stuff, or doing interviews, or even singing. I love it. It didn't even occur to me that this would be the perfect line to end the movie on, but it's the most famous thing anybody's ever said about Elvis. And I'm like, oh yeah. Yeah, yeah. That has to be
that has to be it.
That has to be it. Why would I think it'd be anything else?
I want to mention the family stuff. I think like many things in this movie, it works, but it feels like it's there's not enough of it there. I think this movie, especially the mom stuff, really wants a powerful moment out of the mom stuff, but it just, there wasn't enough there for me to really find my way in on a deep level. But I think that happens several times.
This is a 2.5-hour movie. Do you say that there's anything in this movie that you would cut out to make room for?
Man, I don't know. I don't know what you cut out. That's what I'm saying. You'd have to change the whole structure of the movie if you wanted to make it shorter.
Yeah,
There's a world where it's longer. In fact, I think I think Baz Luhrmann has said there's a 4.5-hour cut.
Oh my goodness! I'd watch it. I would watch it.
I don't know. I might, just for the experience, but I like 2.5 over 4.5.
I think that, okay, this is a theory I've had forever, and I don't know if this is the time to get into this theory, but I'm doing it anyway.
Do it.
So, I think that whenever people, like, hear that, oh, there's a 4-hour movie, oh, I'll never watch that, I'll never watch it, who has time for that? I think people, in their mind, they're confusing, I don't have time to watch it, as opposed to, I don't have time to watch it initially, and then if I like it, watch again and again and again.
Right, right.
I think that a lot of people think, oh, it's an 1.5-hour movie. I can watch it now, and I can see myself watching it, you know, once every 3 months or once a year or something like that, because time is precious. So whenever you have a movie that's like 4.5 hours long, I think what people are saying is, yeah, I'll watch it initially, but I could probably never watch it again because it's so long.
Yeah.
That's my theory. I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, it's true. I did find the article, and it is a 4-hour cut. That he has, that he doesn't think people will see. But yeah.
Put it on HBO Max or something.
Do it.
Who was this? Was this a Warner Brothers movie?
Yeah, Elvis Justice League. Coming soon.
Elvis the Snyder Cut. It's going to be in 4:3. It's going to be great.
The Lerman Cut.
Lerman Cut.
All right, let's move on to our next review. Let's talk about Beavis and Butthead Do the Universe.
Look at that number up there on the billboard.
There's a 2, and then some kind of circle.
No, dumbass, not that number. That one.
69.
This show sucks. It's like just these fat people standing there.
I am Cornholio! I need TV for my bunker!
Who are you, fart knockers?
Amusing, yes.
Humorous, yes.
Satirical comment on the time.
Yes, amusing.
After a creative judge sentenced them to space camp, a black hole sends our adolescent heroes 24 years into the modern future, where the duo misuses iPhones, embarks on a quest to score, and becomes targets of the deep state. This is on Paramount Plus. If you want to check it out, it is Mike Judge, who not only brought us Beavis and Butthead in the Beavis and Butthead previous movie, which I think is Beavis and Butthead Do America, right?
It's one of the most underrated comedies ever, and that's not hyperbole. It really is.
But Mike Judge also brought us things like King of the Hill. He also brought us Office Space. He's got a list of cult hits and knows kind of how to do modern comedy. So what did you think about Beavis and Butthead Do the Universe. Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
I loved it. I loved it. I really did. But here's the thing. I got to say this right now. I have an emotional bias towards Beavis and Butthead. So there's a fandom at play here.
I wondered.
That might be clouding my judgment.
I wondered. I'm going to have to go firmly in the set it on fire. Fire. Set it on fire.
Is that a didn't like it or
yeah, I'm gonna go with didn't like it. There's enough here. I'll even say, like, you know, medium high side of didn't like it. Okay. This just isn't my thing. It's just not my thing. So yeah. So talk about it, Andrew. Talk about your fandom and what you liked about this movie.
Well, I've seen every episode of Beavis and Butthead, the show when it was on MTV.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the movie came out, Beavis and Butthead Do America. That came out, and when did that come out? Maybe if I know how to spell Beavis.
you 96, are a fan, after all.
96. I was 10 years old. My parents took me to go see it, so.
Nicely done, parents.
Yeah. I went and saw Beavis and Butthead Do America. And it's one of the funniest movies. My dad and I, we cry, we laugh so hard every time we watch it. And this, this is a cut. Copy paste of Beavis and Butthead Do America with new skin on it. That's all it is. It's the exact same, like the same comedy beats, you know, like there's an international crisis surrounding these two idiots, mm-hmm. but all they care about is getting laid. Mm-hmm. And that takes them on a journey across, in this case, time and space, as opposed to the first one where it's they wanted to, you know, get laid on a journey across America. So right. It's the exact same thing. He turns into Corn Julio right around the same time as he does in the movie. The only thing this one doesn't have is there's no music video. That's the only thing that's different.
Okay. All right.
Because that's what Beavis and Butthead did on MTV is they watched music videos and it was
right.
kind of like a
right. yeah,
MST3K
yeah.
kind
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah. And there was some of that in the movie, in the first movie, not in this one,
yeah.
but in the first movie. Yeah. I'd forgotten about that.
But Mike Judge gets my sense of humor. And Beavis and Butthead is, like, the purest I think Mike Judge has been as far as his comedy. I think King of the Hill is, like, more of a biopic for Mike Judge. Like, I feel like that's really, like, how he felt growing up, you know? Mm-hmm. I think he was Bobby and that Hank was his interpretation of his dad.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, as the show progressed, he actually became Hank. But, no, I think that the stupid, raunchy 90s... It's literally called Beavis and Butthead humor, you know? Mm-hmm. It's, yeah. I eat it up, man, all day. The stupid stuff like, I'm a deer, or stuff like that. Had me crying. I was laughing. I loved it.
The way I find my way in to this movie is through believing it is satirical. And I think it is. I think Mike Judge knows what he's doing here. Like, I think he is satirizing an element of Americana, an element of, you know, kind of that adolescence yeah. mindset, that he's satirizing it in a way. And he's not saying that, you know, all teenage boys are like this. He's saying this is the satirical version of, you know, kind of that idea, and watch yeah. me take it as far as I can so we can yeah. laugh at it and go, but yes, there's some truth underneath, right? Like, so that is how
step
I find
aside,
my way in.
I have white privilege.
Okay, that was funny. That was maybe my favorite scene. Yeah. Was the white privilege scene. And
you know, that was, what's her name? Teague. The comedian.
Oh, Tig Notaro. No, that was Tig Notaro. That was the
that
professor.
Was the
absolutely.
Professor. Great.
Yeah. Tig's great. Yeah. That whole scene is great. The classroom part of it's great. The after effects are great.
So do you plan on acting differently? You betcha I am.
Yes, that was easily my favorite. And that kind of thing is why I'm able to go, okay, even though I didn't like it, like I'm willing to say like high side of didn't liked it, because there is that comedy that is funny and it is pointed and it is interesting. It's just that so much of it is just repeats over and over and over again. And it's the same joke about them not understanding that the person they're talking to isn't talking about sex. Like that, how many times is that
joke in this movie? It's the exact same thing as the first movie.
Yeah.
With Demi Moore's character.
Yeah.
She is telling them to go plant a bomb in the Capitol, uh-huh. and they think that she's talking about scoring and stuff. Exact same jokes. But you know the way I look at it? I like chocolate ice cream. So if I go back in for another scoop of chocolate ice cream, it's going to taste just as good. You know?
That's You're how not I feel wrong. About no, this movie. I totally get that. I totally get that. I totally understand that perspective. So talk some more about the things you love.
Honestly, I love the fact that Mike Judge knows what to prioritize and what not to prioritize with a movie like this. Like, there's a whole, like, the beginning of this movie of them, like, going to court and then, you know, being sentenced by a judge to go to space camp. This is Mike Judge saying, none of this matters. Don't fact check, like, how, you know, mm-hmm. a judge could sentence somebody to go to space camp.
Right, yeah.
None of that matters, or why, you know, the astronauts would allow two 14-year-old kids to man a multi-billion-dollar operation up in space mm-hmm. just for publicity. He's saying that doesn't matter. This is just to get to the funny bits, you know? Mm-hmm. And I like that, but I can also see how somebody like you probably like, this is stupid. Like, you're wasting my time just to get to funny jokes. Just start with the funny jokes. Is that what you...
I wouldn't say exactly like that.
Are you saying you could do a funny joke and tell a good story at the same time?
I'm saying you could maybe mix it up a little bit. The storytelling part of it is, you know, there's not a lot there to connect to. It's, you know, fairly obvious, fairly forced plot points. And again, like you said, it's not like he's trying to hide that. He's, you know, it's an excuse to watch these two pubescent males be horny, so that's all it is. You know, so there's 10 minutes of them messing around with the docking station because they think it looks sexual, you know, and doing different things or whatever.
No, not 10 minutes. 18 hours straight.
I meant in the movie.
Sure.
But yeah. And at the same time, I get why that can be funny, and it can be funny to laugh at, you know, the ridiculous and the profane and the over the top. And, you know, it's almost better than raunch humor that tries to be explicit, because it's raunch humor that is basic. Like, it's this basic level raunch humor. And I think in some ways that works even better, because it can almost be more innocent, or you know, more simple. That can be interesting at least.
Things I didn't like. As the movie's not original. It's the exact same thing as the first movie. So if you're going into this wanting something new, like a new adventure with Beavis and Butthead, it's the same as the first movie.
Yeah.
There's pretty much the same jokes, same beats, but I love that.
Yeah.
So I love the first movie. So,
yeah.
And I love the fish out of water element of putting them in modern times, taking them from 1998, sending them to the future to present time, and they realize the power of a cell phone, and all they do with it is, you know, buy food.
Not just food.
No, but yeah, I didn't want to spoil it.
Okay, then yeah, don't. You don't have to spoil it. No.
And then, you know, them finding out or not understanding Siri, you know, stuff like mm-hmm. that. It's great stuff. I love that. The alien versions of mm-hmm. them, I could have done without.
Yeah.
Because it didn't add anything to the movie.
I did enjoy the very humorous,
lighthearted.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you say that it didn't add anything to the movie, but it really literally is the only thing that it makes the story go. Like, at the end of the day, like the alien versions are the only pieces that actually give us some sort of coherent beginning, middle, and end.
I got an important question for you.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever seen a show called Touched by an Angel.
Okay, that was funny too. You're convincing me that I thought this movie was funnier than I remember.
It is funny. It can be
Mike
a
Judge
bad
is hilarious. Okay, he's hilarious.
You can say that this is a bad movie, and I won't have any problem with that.
Okay.
I don't think that, knowing you personally, I think you can say that this is a funny movie.
Yes.
While it being bad at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely think that's how you approach it. And honestly, it's not stealing too much of your time. It's under 90 minutes. Like, it's, yeah, you know, it's a quick watch.
The only caveat is it's only on Paramount Plus.
That is correct. That is correct. It is only on Paramount Plus. You said Mount. You said Mount.
Mount. I did.
See, we could write it. We could just write the movie and be done with it. That's not true.
How difficult is it to sound that dumb? Like, to come up with jokes that dumb? It's got to be hard.
You said hard.
I did it again.
See? Not that difficult.
I guess it isn't.
That's all you got to do. That's all you got to do. Just lots of double entendres.
Nice.
All right. That is Beavis and Butthead Do the Universe. Any final words on that before we move on?
You know what you're getting into.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that's fair. Before we hit the best ever challenge, a thank you to our SifPop members. Thank you to SifPop members for supporting what goes on SifPop. You can do that at Patreon, patreon.com/SifPop. And you, at different levels, get different fun perks, like an ad-free podcast feed. Ooh. With bonus podcasts thrown in there. Almost every week we do a bonus podcast. So you can check that out at patreon.com/SifPop, SIFTPOP. And appreciate it. Thanks for checking it out.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, let's move into the best ever challenge. We're doing best ever musical biopics. So these are our favorites of the musical biopic genre. Andrew is he's realizing he hasn't seen a lot of these because he thought it was just biopics. But no, musical biopics.
Man, I had some good ones picked out for just biopics.
I'm sure you did. I'm sure
you
did.
We were going to talk Braveheart. We were going to...
Well, let's go from number 5 to number 1. You can trump if you have it higher. What did you have at number 5, Andrew?
Bohemian Rhapsody.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rami, I think you like that more than I did, even.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because actually, I remember when we reviewed this, you came away not liking it all.
Yeah,
much,
I didn't like it
you?
Very much.
Yeah. It's the 5th greatest biopic of all time, I think.
There you go.
Because I apparently have only seen 5. No, I think that... yes, the movie does fabricate a whole lot about Freddie Mercury's life, but I think that for as good as Austin Butler is playing Elvis, I think Rami Malek is leagues better somehow at becoming Freddie Mercury. I think it was great to see him work and to transform into that musical genius. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I personally really enjoy Bohemian Rhapsody. Your number five.
My number five, I think, is a better performance than Austin Butler or Rami Malek. Mm. And that is Taron Egerton as Elton John in Rocket
Man. Rocket Man. I thought you would have had this higher for as much as you love it.
I do love it, but I also love several other musical biopics as well. I think Taron Egerton is amazing in this. I do give him extra props for singing all the music, performing it as Elton John. I think this movie is constructed really interestingly and done well, and got a good sense for Elton, his music, and his life. So, yeah, that's my number five is Rocket Man.
Nice.
Number four, what do you got?
This is one of the happiest movies you will ever see in your life. It's Adrian Brody's The Pianist.
Yes. Very, very uplifting.
Yes, exactly. I don't know how to pronounce his name. It's a Vladislav. It's about a Jewish pianist during World War II in Warsaw ghettos. Obviously, I was joking about it being a happy movie. This movie is incredibly depressing. And this movie is famous for Adrian Brody winning an Oscar over Daniel Day-Lewis in Gangs of New York.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That's the most interesting bit of trivia I have for it, is that he should not have won for as good as he is.
Yeah.
This is a great movie, though. It really is. And it's a rough watch, though.
Let's see. I will go to 2015 for my number four.
Okay.
Let's talk about Straight Outta Compton.
As your number four?
As my number four.
Same.
Oh, all right. Well, let's talk about it then.
Yeah.
I think this movie is phenomenal. I think O.J. Jackson Jr. is a revelation. I think what this movie does to let you into this world in a complete way feels authentic. It's never distracting. Everything feels real. Really great stuff going on here. Corey Hawkins as Dr. Dre is also amazing. Just lots of great performances. Lots of good stuff. So, yeah.
Straight Outta Compton, I think, had the perfect portion size of music, politics, and drama within the group. It handled everything for the right amount of time. I think it's a brilliantly told movie.
Yep. Yep. That is Straight Outta Compton. And where else are you going to get Lakeith Stanfield playing Snoop Dogg?
I don't know. You tell me.
Nowhere. Nowhere, Andrew. Not a single place. All right. On to our number threes then. So I guess back to, wait, to me then? No, to you. Wait, hold on. I thought you went first. So how was Straight Outta Compton your number four and you didn't say it? Did I just go out of order?
I guess it was my number three.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
So, but yeah. So now it's your number three, I guess.
So we'll go to my number three. Yes. I got a little confused there.
It's my fault.
So you had Bohemian Rhapsody at five.
Then The Pianist.
Pianist
and
at
then
four,
my number three, Straight Outta Compton.
Straight Outta Compton was three. Okay. All right. So technically you should have trumped me and then we talked about it. But that's fine. My number three is Walk the Line.
Trump.
I figured you might.
There we go.
One.
There we go.
All right. What is your number two?
Walk the Line.
Hey, we did it right this time.
Yeah, that's how we're supposed to do it. I think that this is like the best way to do like a full life biopic.
Mm.
I think that, you know,
it's pretty amazing stuff.
It's really good. You know, John C. Reilly that's the wrong movie. I think that, Johnny Cash, I think, growing up around here in the Ozarks especially, like, he was a god. I know he wasn't from the area, but, you know, whenever you live in the Ozarks and you're talking about country music legends, you know, Johnny Cash, he was everywhere. The day he died, actually, I think it was a freshman in high school the day he passed away, or actually it might have been my sophomore year, the school had like a moment of silence, like over the loudspeaker in all the classes. Like, it was a big deal.
Yeah,
he was a big deal. So it's Joaquin Phoenix, one of the greatest actors working ever. So yeah, it's great. And then of course Reese Witherspoon.
I agree. I think the performances are amazing. I think the story is told really expertly. I think this is a fabulous movie. If you have not seen Walk the Line, huge recommend.
And unlike Elvis, Walk the Line really shows the flaws, mm-hmm. like in the personal demons and torments that you know the musician went through.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, that was my number two, so you're number two.
My number two is the life story of Jonathan Larson, as played by Andrew Garfield. My number two is Tick, Tick, Boom.
Yeah, that would have knocked a couple off my list, if I would have thought of it.
Yeah, it's obviously really recent. Maybe a little bit of recency bias here. I love this movie.
It's that good.
I've watched this movie so many times already. I listen to the soundtrack all the time. I think this is such an expertly told story of what Jonathan Larson was going through, and then telling it in a way that is inspiring about what it means to create, what it means to keep going. The fact that all this amazingness that we're seeing ends up with a try again next time is just one of the most brilliant things I've ever seen about the creative process. Andrew Garfield is clearly astonishing in this. So, yeah, that is my number two.
Actually, that probably would have been my number one.
Really?
Think about it. It really probably would have been my number one. Nice. I was thinking solely from the recording artist viewpoint. Mm-hmm. But
yeah,
it probably would have been my number one.
Yep. Well, there you go. So what is your, I think we're on to our number ones. So yep. What is your number one?
8 Mile.
I have it in my honorable mentions. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. But I was torn calling this a biopic.
Yeah.
But I think so much of it is, you know, Marshall's life.
Absolutely. Like I said, I had it in my honorable mentions. It's so focused on a
certain point. That you can change the character's name to Rabbit, and but this was his life. So, mm-hmm. Lose Yourself is probably like one of the best songs ever made for a movie.
Mm-hmm.
So good that they randomly put it in a couple years ago's Oscars performances, like out of nowhere.
Just out of
which
nowhere.
I did not complain one bit. I remember you. I think that was you. That was the first year we actually had to record over the. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we did live reaction. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're like, wait, this is happening?
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah. It's a good movie. It really is.
It really is. And like you said, maybe it's stretching the category a little bit, but not really. This is Eminem's story in many ways. So
I only knew, well, apparently now, 6 musical biopics. So,
so there you go.
Come
your number
slide.
One. My number
what is
one
your number one?
Is Amadeus. Is oh, my yeah. number one. Having just recently seen this over the last couple of years, this movie is phenomenal.
Probably should have had this on my list
too. It is so good. There's such a manic energy and kind of the Beethoven Salieri, you know, rivalry is just so fun.
One-sided rivalry.
Yes, no, and that's kind of what makes it super interesting, right? Like
yeah.
High recommend if you haven't seen Amadeus. So many great scenes, so many great moments. Really impressive
stuff.
Oh,
the scene where Salieri wrote the music for Beethoven to play for the king on that mm-hmm. little piano. He's like, oh, I just kind of replay this little bit over and over again, uh-huh. right? Like,
yeah.
He doesn't realize he's demeaning Salieri's work, you know?
Right.
Yeah, you're right. This probably would have been my number three-ish. Probably.
Yeah, yeah. So, no, Amadeus is really, really good.
So, goodbye, The Pianist and Bohemian Rhapsody. You've been replaced you've by been Tick, Tick, Boom mentions. And Amadeus.
I will mention a couple others in honorable mentions. Ray, I think, is worth mentioning.
I haven't seen Ray.
It's really good. It's really good. In fact, many people would probably have it on their list. It is that good. Love and Mercy, which is about Brian Wilson from the Beach Boys, is more recent. I think that is a criminally overlooked musical biopic.
That's the one that has really both good. John Cusack and what's his face just played the Riddler.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. He has John Cusack and the Riddler in the movie as the Riddler. You're Paul Dano in John Cusack.
Paul Dano. Thank you.
Playing Brian Wilson. So
I've heard that that's actually a criminally underlooked movie.
It really is.
I haven't seen it.
And also includes Paul Giamatti making an appearance in a musical biopic, as he tends to do every once in a while. He was also in Straight Outta Compton.
Yeah.
And then the only other one I wanted to mention, I think is also overlooked, is Get On Up. Did you ever see Get On Up?
That's the Brown one, isn't it?
Yes, James Brown.
James Brown.
Yeah, Chadwick Boseman plays James Brown. And he is absolutely astonishing. Viola Davis is Susie Brown. Octavia Spencer is in it. Dan Aykroyd. It's a really impressive film. And
Ma Rainey's Black Bottom is an August Wilson play, but it's not a biopic play, is it?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that. I mean, I guess you could stretch the category to count it, maybe. But
I've already stretched it enough with Eight Mile and stuff. So that was more just me being curious.
Yeah. Anyhow, check out Get On Up, especially if you haven't seen that Chadwick performance. It is definitely worth your time. So, yeah, Get On Up was worth a mention, I think. So, there you go. Best ever musical biopics. And we will move on to the Buried Treasure.
Buried Treasure.
What is that one thing in any area of pop culture, Andrew, that you want to make sure people know about before we go?
You want me to go first?
I can go first if you want.
Oh, I'll let you go first because I went first on the Buried Treasure.
I've been playing video games again. Video games for me. I'm a Nintendo kid. I got myself a Switch. One of my boys upgraded to the OLED Switch. And so
I need to find my They Live glasses to see if you're really an alien.
See if I'm an alien.
Yeah.
So I got myself back into Nintendo games, and this game has been out. In fact, I think it released with the original Switch. So, like, this has been out a long time. I understand this, but I'm really enjoying it. Super Mario Odyssey. Playing quite a bit. I think this is a really fun platformer. The hat mechanic is kind of the new mechanic it adds, where you're, like, tossing your hat onto different creatures that you then become, or you're tossing it on different things to do stuff. It's kind of this, like, living animated hat creature, and I think that mechanic adds a lot of new fun stuff. There was a moment where I was just exploring and realized there was a Tyrannosaurus Rex coming after me and freaked me out. And then I thought, wait a second, I wonder if I can become the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And I was able to. So playing Mario as a T-Rex was a lot of fun. Lots of fun in this game. I'm about 7 worlds in, really enjoying finding all the little, stars and moons. I think it's technically moons in this game. I love a good Mario platformer, and this one's a ton of fun. So I thought I'd mention it. I know it's old. I know if you like this kind of stuff, you probably already played all the way through it and have 100%ed everything. But I did want to let you know I'm playing it and really enjoying it.
No, hearing that you're playing video games is like one of the most shocking things. Like, you could have told me that you're getting divorced and I would have been less shocked than you telling me that you were getting...
No, it's actually been...
That's not me saying that you and Jen's relationship is not solid as a rock. That's more the fact that this is so outlandish that I can't believe it.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned, because one of the reasons we got it was... playing Mario Kart together, which is something we used to enjoy doing.
Yeah.
And so we've been playing Mario Kart 8 together and with other friends and online, and it's really fun. So that's actually the reason we got it, was to have some something to do. So, yeah.
To spice up the marriage, because
that's right.
We're going
to right.
Yeah. I get that.
Andrew, what is your buried treasure?
Aaron, I don't know if I've ever told you this about me. I used to be a nationally competitive paintball player.
Is this true?
Yeah.
Is this real right now? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to travel around the U.S. on a team. We would play in a national league. And I had so much fun. It was a huge part of my life. I'm actually getting back into paintball. And with that, I wanted to recommend... people, because a lot of people just have this stereotypical idea of what paintball is like. You know, you go in the woods and stuff like that. The national circuit is nothing like that. It's like on a soccer field, and you have inflatable bunkers. and you have 30 minutes on the clock, and it's to beat the other team as mm-hmm. many times as you can. It's called the National X-Ball League.
Okay.
Or the NXL. I'm obviously not recommending people go and join, you know, the NXL or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But you can go and you can watch the professionals play. I was never a professional. I wasn't even close. These are, like, insanely athletic people. Like, they can run the 40-yard, like, pretty close to a four, you know, mm-hmm. like they're up there with like a wide receivers and stuff.
Yeah.
Very athletic people, but there are some amazing teams. It's called the NXL, but it's actually becoming more international now. It has been for a long time. There's a team from Moscow who, if you're watching on YouTube, there's a picture below us. That's the Red Legion. That's the Moscow Red Legion. Amazing team, San Diego Dynasty, Baltimore Trauma, Edmonton Impact. It's amazing to see a high level competition in the sport, because nice. It's unlike anything you've ever seen. You can go to YouTube, the YouTube channel that has most of these backlogged events. There's been three events this year. There's been one in Florida, Texas, and they just wrapped one up last week in Philadelphia, which was going to be my buried treasure last week, but I wasn't here. But, yeah, so you can go on Go Sports, it's a YouTube channel, or you can just type in NXL paintball, and you can get a whole plethora of videos you can watch, and it is a lot of fun. I'm actually rebuilding a couple of my old paintball guns right now, and I have a new one coming in the mail any minute, so.
There you go. NXL yep. paintball. Very nice. Check out that on YouTube. And Super Mario Odyssey is on the Nintendo Switch. We did a podcast, Andrew. Congratulations.
Yeah,
podcasting has happened.
I can't believe it, but I'm so proud of you.
Call the papers. Headline. Breaking news. A podcast happened. Thank you so much for joining us today for Sif Pop. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
yeah, okay.
Huge thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
You said deuce.
Much love and gratitude to our Sif Pop members for giving monthly to make Sif Pop a real thing. Support starts at $3 a month, and you get access to bonus episodes, some other fun perks, monthly video hangouts, all that kind of fun stuff. You can check it out at the page on Patreon, patreon.com/siftpop. Lots of ways to connect with us. You can leave a comment, a rating, or a review at Apple Podcasts, or you can email us, feedback@sifpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like it too, so let them know about it, and then that listening is much easier than docking the space station after burning out both of your retinas. we will be back...
So stupid.
We'll be back next week with some Minions talk, probably, and more. So we will see you then.
Bye!
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.